very much appreciate it. Thank you. I would like to start by acknowledging my colleague and co-author, Mike Bolling, and other members of the research team, the data collectors, and especially the school staff and students who participated in the study. Why are we interested in survey data from schools and from local data? We all know that national surveys have some limitations. For example, the current population survey does not study employment of teens that are under 16 years of age. Also, some surveys, such as the National Longitudinal Youth Survey, have limitations in that they are not representative of all states. They try to be representative, but some local data is missed in these data. It's important to identify subpopulations of teens to be surveyed and targeted for educational interventions. The objective of this presentation is really to examine the socio-demographic differences between the employed teens and unemployed teens and see how those compare to the national data. The methods. This study was based on surveys that were school-based. We randomly selected 32 schools, 16 from North Carolina and 16 from South Carolina. And it was a multi-stage design where the clusters were the schools. We randomly selected schools, and we used the probability proportionate to size. So the bigger schools had more probability of being selected. And then we randomly selected second period classes. So six classes were surveyed from each school. And we collected data from 96 classes in each of the in each of the states. It was very challenging to get the schools to accept participating in these surveys. As you all know, you go through the school districts, then the schools, and if the principals accepted, the teachers may not accept. And so we had to collect all this data in a period of 2 months. We collected like 4,000 schools, 4,000 students were surveyed. And because of the sampling designs, we had to wait till the school gave us the schedules. How did we define employment? Employment was defined as work in any paid job during the 2 years prior to the study. And the work could be in any job, but we excluded agricultural employment and domestic employment because this data is part of a larger study that focused on violations and comparing states with permits with states without work permits. And so we had to study the occupations and the teen employment that were subject to federal and state child labor laws. The questionnaire took 15 minutes to administer. We had to get parental consent and the teen assent prior to the survey. We surveyed all the students in each class that accepted to participate, and there was a screening question in the beginning of the survey, and the students who did not work filled only the socio-demographic section at the end, and the working students completed the whole questionnaire. We had a fairly high response rate. We used the range of 74% to 87% for North Carolina using the CASRO definition, and it was slightly higher for South Carolina. The range was 83 to 91%. And the conservative, the low end of the range has to do with eligibility. So those with unknown eligibility, we considered them as all eligible, but decided, but we could not verify their eligibility. So we had a total of 844 working teens who completed the whole questionnaire in North Carolina and a total of 811 working teams in South Carolina. This table shows the selected characteristics of the sample. In North Carolina, because of the sampling design, we wanted to ensure urban and rural equal representation. So we sampled so that we can have representation from urban and rural counties. In North Carolina, 60% of the students were white, the working teens. And the males, there was no differentiation between males and females. They were almost equal. Higher percentage of working teens were older teens, and they were from higher grades, grades 11 and 12. The sampling design was such that the students from grades 10 and 11 and 12 were sampled. Similar to North Carolina, the characteristics of the sample, except for the urban-rural, the working teens in South Carolina, the majority, 68%, came from urban schools. Even though we tried to, in the sampling design, have equal, but it was higher, the working teens were higher from urban areas. There was, the working teens were 53% white, slightly higher than the non-working teens. No differentiation by gender. And higher proportion of the working teens were older and from higher grades. In both states, the maternal education was higher than the paternal education. Just to show, this table is just to show that about 44% of the teens in both states worked in more than one job. The majority, like three-quarters of them, worked during the school year. And at the time of the survey, over half of them were still working. We also measured family ownership of business. And the question was if the business was entirely owned by parents or if it was owned by a guardian or a family member. And about 10 to 11% in each of the states were family owned. This is a very important measure because one-third of the fatalities of young workers occur in family businesses. And I don't want to elaborate on this study, but basically we found when we analyzed the data of working teens is that teens without work permits, they were highly concentrated in family businesses. The majority of teens who worked in family businesses did not have any kind of safety training as compared to teens who worked in department stores and retail and service type jobs. Also, just as a final comment on this, the younger teens were the ones who worked in family businesses and they worked in construction activities because teens who are younger than 16 cannot work in department stores and informal employment, so they tend to work in informal employment in very dangerous occupations. The types of jobs, here we categorize them in four categories, but actually the descriptive statistics, we used the seven occupational categories of the current population surveys. They had seven categories, but for analytical purposes, we condensed them in these four categories, and these were the major categories of, you could see that the teens worked mainly in service and retail, and the services were mainly in the food service industry. This pie chart is to compare our findings to those of the current population survey, and they were very identical, which really gave us some confidence in the reliability of our sampling. So you could see that most of the teens worked in food preparation services, other types of services, and in sales and cashier types jobs. And this is the same actually in South Carolina. In South Carolina, a little bit higher percentage of teens worked in services. I'm going to flip through these a little bit quickly because I'm going to show a table with the socio-demographic differences in both states. But basically, in North Carolina, when we compared working teens to non-working teens, the variables that were significant were very similar to those of national surveys. The older teens, the teens who were in higher grades, white teens, were more likely to be employed than teens of that were African American, those of other races, or younger teens. Even though the maternal employment and maternal education are usually better indicators than paternal employment and paternal education, in these surveys we found that in North Carolina, the father's education was significant. It was more of a proxy for socioeconomic status than the maternal education. In South Carolina, teens who worked were more likely to come from urban areas, and the father employment was an indicator. Teens who worked were more likely to have fathers who worked compared to teens who were unemployed. And the same like in North Carolina in national surveys, older teens, white teens, and those who were in higher grades were more likely to be employed. This is just a comparison just to see between the two states. I already mentioned what were the significant differences in each of the states. So race, grade, and were the same. South Carolina was different in urban-rural location, and in North Carolina it was the father education, whereas in South Carolina it's the father employment. Discussion. We found some similarities to national surveys in that teens who were white, older teens, were more likely to be employed. And similar to national surveys, teens who were more likely to be from higher incomes, we did not measure income, but teens who came from employed fathers and fathers with higher level of education tended to have more employment opportunities. I think further research should examine the patterns of employment. It is hypothesized that teens who are from higher socioeconomic status, they have more social networks and more opportunities for work, more transportation. So they are at an advantage. And when looking at these results, even though the implications are not just for safety interventions, it is important to give opportunities for teens to work because, you know, as we all know, work is, has advantages for transition from school to career. You know, we cannot really draw conclusions from this study based on just these comparisons. The conclusions for safety interventions are really to be drawn when we examine in depth the employment of teens. When we stratified by age, gender, compared teens who were white to other teens. And we saw that teens who were minorities were working in more hazardous occupations, more violations of child labor regulations. So we have to be very cautious from this presentation in drawing conclusions about safety interventions. There were limitations to this study in that we excluded agricultural employment, which is really one of the major hazardous occupations. We did not randomly sample. However, the counties were very representative of other counties. School dropouts were not included, and the employment patterns of school dropouts are somewhat different. Also, we had some bias with regard to some variables with regards to age and gender. The younger teens, the females, were more likely to skip responses. So there was some bias. Okay, what are the conclusions to be drawn? We really need to know the causes and possible solutions for closing the gap and giving knowing why there are some disparities in employment between whites, African Americans, and other races. Also, we need to study in depth the employment patterns and study working youth and see the study by seasonal employment, by age, and see the differences and whether the younger teens, Latins of other races and African Americans are working longer hours and working in more hazardous occupations. Thank you. I would welcome any questions you have and also any recommendations or suggestions you can make with regards to implications. Yeah, we had actually the questions about the jobs. It was open-ended. And so we had to fit them in the various categories. And those that were silly or did not make sense, we tossed them out. So we spent a long time cleaning this data and looking at the missing responses. And when there was a pattern of missing, we made judgments how to toss them out. Yes.
Janet, I don't know if you looked at that, but what I presume you look at the employed, the students only. I was wondering if employment had any effect on the scholastic achievement of the students in terms of grades and so on.
No, not in this study, actually. This is very important, and I'm glad you asked that, because when we tried to convince the schools to come on board and participate, the only way we were able to convince them is not through safety and harp on safety aspects, but we said this study is important. We really need to know, because working long hours affects scholastic achievement. And in fact, other than financial incentives to the schools, like we pay $250 to each school to participate, we designed educational materials. And these educational materials were geared to the laws in each state. So the materials were knowing workers' rights and, you know, listing the labor laws, making very attractive pictures. And we actually borrowed from the occupational, the one that Diane and UCLA, we used that and modified that. So we're very grateful to you. But this is how we really convinced the schools to come on board.
So they use this educational material?
Yeah, we actually followed up just with telephone calls, and some did and some didn't, but we're hoping to get funding, so we follow up with these 32 schools mm-hmm. and see what they did with them.
Great, one more question?
I'm not quite sure where I'm going with this, so let me think out loud for a minute. Some of the work that's been done on the Canadian side of the border, I think, has been really useful in pointing out the need to look separately at young women and young men and at the age groups.
Yes.
Yes. In the stuff he did between the older young workers and the ones that were really teens. And I'm curious about, particularly if if these students are still students, as what, you know, sort of to get to the point about working and going to school, it's not just that their school marks are going to be slipping, but what's happening to them all, like what state are they in on the job as well? And is there some way to sort of look at, in that younger, you know, sort of, is what effect does age and gender have? They may be surrogates for the exposures, I don't know. And sort of what effect does it have when you are working on the likelihood of something happening to you? When you're going to school, what's the likelihood of something happening to you?
Yes.
Because there's too much going on.
Yes, you raised very important points. I'll just address with regards to the differences in age. I didn't dwell on the analysis, you know, but actually, because the child labor laws differ between for younger teens and older teens, so we, in our analysis, we really and the analysis on working teens, we did separate analysis for younger than 16 and separate analysis for older because they are subject to different regulations. With regard to you, the other point you raised. This is one of the limitations of cross-sectional surveys. A longitudinal survey would be better because you can follow up these kids. And then you can see those who work many hours, the intensity of work, how it affects the, you know, the transition to work. There is no doubt, you know, when you the literature clearly shows that, you know, kids who work long hours, it does have negative consequences on achievement.
If, we know that long hours of work, however old you are, shortens your life. And that's the cumulative effect of this stuff. So if they're starting with, you know, sort of juggling, you know,
yes.
I'm just wondering what that sexual stuff is.
Yeah, it's you know, I presented last year about this. It is the number of hours they work way violates the labor laws. It was astounding when we looked at the number of hours worked. You know, and actually, just to if I have 1 minute to say this,
1 more minute.
the National Survey on Children's Health. You know, when we looked at South Carolina, it's way above the national average about the kids who work greater than 10 hours.